Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. It's Friday already. Wow. Friday, October. No. It's Friday, November 11th, 2011. Man, the time is just screaming by. I actually looked it up this time, and this is podcast number 48. Now, actually, when I say it's podcast number 48, that's a little bit deceptive, because if you go to badquaker.com, there are somewhere around 110 files of one kind or another. They are podcasts, they are audio articles, they are interviews. So technically we're at around 110 or so audio files available for download, but this would be the actual, within the classification of podcasts, this is podcast number, 48? Yeah, 48. Okay, so if you're listening on iTunes and you noticed that there was no article for yesterday, for Thursday the 10th, I'd like to give you an explanation for that, except I don't have one. We posted the audio article, and we used this normal method we always used for posting an article, and it met all the criteria for iTunes to accept it, and for some reason, whatever reason, iTunes did not post it. So if you want yesterday's article, this is called The Constant Enemy of Liberty. Just go to badquaker.com and scroll down a little bit. It'll be the today, Friday, it'll be the second one down. But you can just scroll down and see it there. Or you can do a search, hit the, it'll be listed under recent posts off to your right side in the menus there. Or you can just hit the under categories, you can hit all podcasts, and that'll pull up all the most recent podcasts, and you can... you'll want to hit the button audio articles, and it should be the most recent audio article. Okay, so a couple things I wanted to talk about today. I'm going to start with the, I actually have three things that I want to get to if I have time. I'm going to start with the lightest one of the three. I am at the website... Oh, I'm on Bloomberg. I'm on Bloomberg's website. And I'm reading the headline here. It says, Jefferson County, Alabama files biggest municipal bankruptcy. And you read through the story. I'll put a link to this at badquaker.com. You read through the story and you see that the county where the city of Birmingham, Alabama is located is filing for Chapter 9 bankruptcy. The catalyst in this appears to be some kind of a boondoggle having to do with a sewer system that the voters shot down yet another tax, and we can call it however they want to change the wording to make us feel better about it. But it appears as though the residents just got sick of the constant taxation, and they said no to the county, so the county is just filing bankruptcy. It says here in the article that the county's major creditor was J.P. Morgan Chase. And my first thought in this is, I wonder what's going to happen to all of the pension plans, all of the pension money that the county employees have stored up over the years, and all those employees that are depending on that pension money for their retirement, and all the ones that have already retired. I wonder what's going to happen to all that pension money, because I'm thinking what GM did. Now, GM didn't actually file bankruptcy the way this county is, but GM took the government money and played shenanigans, and it ended up costing people, a lot of people, their retirement money. So I'm wondering if the reason J.P. Morgan Chase is so quick to refuse to negotiate and force the county into bankruptcy has something to do with their retirement fund or their pension fund. I'm wondering who, what bank holds that fund, and exactly what will happen to it in this as they go through Chapter 9. I don't know. I don't know. All I'm doing is speculating. Here's the thing, though, about what we're going to be seeing in the future. Oh, I know. Let me just read this one statement here. Here it is. Okay, so according to the article, Jefferson County is the 12th entity to file Chapter 9 bankruptcy this year in 2011 alone. Let's see, it also mentions Boise County, Idaho, Central Falls, Rhode Island, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and a number of others, including Orange County. Oh, no, that's a different one. Orange County, California, filed bankruptcy protection in 1994, and the article compares that to the Jefferson County bankruptcy. But the real point here being that Jefferson County is the 12th entity this year to file bankruptcy. And we're talking about governmental agencies like counties and cities and so forth. It's not hard to predict that we're going to see a lot more of this. What's a little bit more hard to predict is what the ultimate outcome of this is going to be, because as these municipalities file bankruptcy one after the other, it causes the mind to speculate on the future, because there's no real end game in this as far as where does this stop. As long as they continue doing the same things that they're doing on both a national level and a local level, and there's no sign that they're going to stop doing what they've been doing, with just more and more money printing and more credit expansion and more government spending and more people depending on the government in one way or another, and less people being actually productive and adding things into the economy. And you know, as that trend just continues to get worse and worse and worse, and they don't seem to have any inclination to address that aspect of it whatsoever, what's the end going to look like of this? How will it stop? And of course we're going to see more and more bankruptcies of municipalities. Of course we're going to see a continued, as we have seen for the last few years, a continued steady stream of the big banks swallowing the smaller banks. And this happens, if you're not noticing it, very often on a Friday night, a small local bank will close its doors. The FDIC will take over. It will either change names, or it will open under the same name but under the ownership of one of the major banks the very next Monday, and the thing is all done over the weekend when the bank is mostly closed anyway. And these things are now being done without really even being, the mainstream media is not even really covering the story, because it's happening with such frequency. But so where will this all end? Well, you know, eventually it will end in the entire collapse of the U.S. government. And then there will have to be some kind of a European Union type organization that will take over North America, and then eventually that will collapse, and eventually there will be a one world government. This is the nature of the state. The nature of the state is to constantly expand, to constantly fail, and to constantly use aggression to recreate itself over and over in a larger, more powerful fashion. So, you know, that's the inevitable end. But what will the end look like on a short term in the next few years? Well, that's hard to determine. What will happen is these counties go, one after the other goes bankrupt. And even, you know, Boise, really? Boise, Idaho? That's mind-boggling. You would think, sure, you can understand how Detroit would go bankrupt, or how even the county, what is it, Jefferson County? Yeah, even Jefferson County, where Birmingham is located, you can understand that because of the depressive conditions of the area and everything. But when you think of Idaho, you think, they shouldn't be getting hit with this economic hardship like the rest of the nation is. But yet they are. But that's not the point. Corrupt officials spending more than they have can happen on government of any level. It does happen constantly on governments of every level. So it shouldn't be a surprise when we see Boise, Idaho, doing the exact same mistakes and the exact same behavior as we're seeing in Washington, D.C., and we're seeing in Detroit, and we're seeing in Jefferson County, Alabama. So again, what's the end going to look like for these municipalities? Well, I suspect they're going to do exactly what Detroit is doing, where Detroit is basically, it's like a person who has gangrene setting in. The only thing you can do is start cutting off limbs. And that's what Detroit is doing. Detroit is taking whole neighborhoods and just severing service to them, service of all kinds, waters, police, fire, emergency services, electric, sewer. They're just cutting off service to whole sections of their town. And I think that's probably going to be the path that we're going to see more and more of. And that's kind of scary. On the other hand, it presents an opportunity for freedom. Because as the government pulls back because of its failure, there's an opportunity for black market to open and to begin providing services. As a matter of fact, logically, there's no reason why black market forces cannot essentially take over in the abandoned areas of a place like Detroit and start using start causing the sewers to be functional again, repairing what needs to be repaired, organizing groups and doing these services without the force of government and without the permission of government, and providing the residents that are left with these services for a fee. It might be criminal. It will certainly be criminal because the state hates competition and won't tolerate it. And there might have to be, I'm not sure, I haven't really worked this out in my mind, but there might have to be some type of underground way. I don't mean underground as far as, digging in dirt. I mean underground as far as not obvious to the government. A way of pirating electricity or of tapping into the existing sewer and making the city ultimately deal with the sewage problem, even though they're attempting to skirt their responsibilities on it. I don't know exactly how that would take place. But that's the wonderful thing about markets. Whatever the need is, if the need arises, there are enough minds working, there are enough people in the market that somebody will come up with a solution and the need gets filled. The next thing, let's move away from the bankrupt municipalities. Over at Washington's blog, and I actually found this by going to blacklistednews.com, and they had a link to the story over at Washington's blog. And it's a really interesting story. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because it really goes through and gives links to a lot of detail and a lot of support for the very, very bold statement that it's making. But the headline is Major Wars and Suppression of American Freedoms Planned Before 9/11. It starts with Iran. It says Iran war threats, militarization of... Oh, I see. This is the second headline. I'll read the secondary headline. Iran war threats, militarization of American police, and spying on Americans all started before 9/11. So that's its statement. And then it begins to document this. For example, the Christian Science Monitor has noted that for more than 30 years, the United States government has claimed that Iran was right on the verge of nuclear capability. This is including before 9/11, when the U.S. was threatening to bomb Iran for its supposed the supposed nuclear threat. Another example is the militarization of the police force in the United States. And it has links to CNN, Huffington Post, Forbes, Esquire, The Atlantic, Salon, and the Cato Institute. I can vouch for that. The Cato Institute did a wonderful article. This was back about 2000, 2007 or 2008. I don't know if I can find the link to that or not, but if so, I'll post it. They did a wonderful article about the overuse of SWAT units by the police and its growing tendency. And that was back then, and it's tremendously more now. And then they go on to talk about how police brutality has been steadily increasing for years, long before the 9/11, and long before Homeland Security, long before all that. And they give links to document that, including a link to to Radley Balco testifying before the House Subcommittee on Crime, where he shows that for the last 25 years, there's been a systematic militarization of local police and how that took place and how it's taking place and ultimately what the outcome is going to be on that. Radley Balco is a pretty good guy. He's written a lot of good stuff. Then here's the fun part. Did you know that the Afghan war, the war in Afghanistan, was planned well before 9/11? It was, and in this article there are links to support that statement. Now, that doesn't shock me because I knew that we basically set up the Taliban as the governing body in Afghanistan, and we radicalized the Muslims that were in Afghanistan through CIA-published material. So it doesn't surprise me at all that we would have done all that for the purpose of setting up Afghanistan to be attacked and taken later on. On top of that, when you consider the CIA's constant fascination for heroin in the heroin market, and the CIA's constant involvement in the poppy market, and Afghanistan being the traditional location for that type of thing, it's just a matter of time until the CIA moves in and takes over. And that's what we're seeing now in Afghanistan, with private security being paid for by the U.S. taxpayers and mostly American private security actually on the ground guarding poppy fields for the Afghan warlords and for the CIA. Now, that's actually going on today, right now. American private security personnel are being paid by American tax dollars to guard poppy fields that are managed by the CIA and owned by Afghanistan warlords. So that part's not in this article, but the article does give links to show that the war on Afghanistan was planned well before 9/11. Additionally, he shows that the decision to launch a war against Iraq was made before 9/11, that there was even talk of it before George Bush was elected in 2000. Before George Bush was elected in 2000, there was already discussions on George W. Bush, taking us into Afghanistan for the purpose of controlling the oil fields. And then he gives links to where Alan Greenspan, John McCain, George W. Bush, Sarah Palin, and he says a high-level national security officer all made the statements that the purpose of the Iraq war was the Iraq oil fields. The purpose of the Iraq war, yeah, was the Iraq oil fields. And this is an old one, although it may not be old to some people, but a lot of us knew this already. The Patriot Act was entirely drafted and sitting there waiting to be implemented long before 9/11. The Clinton administration on a couple of occasions attempted to get it through, and there just wasn't the support for it. So the Patriot Act was not about 9/11. The Patriot Act was something that the forces of Washington, D.C. wanted to get through a long time ago, but didn't have a good excuse, and 9/11 provided that excuse. And what else do we have? Oh, he talks about increasing in government spying on American citizens prior to 9/11. And like I said, there's just an abundance of links to support these what some might consider radical accusations, but certainly they match the modus operandi of the state. I'll put a link to that in today's podcast notes as well. Now, the last thing I'd like to talk about is something that's striking very close to my family, and I have a particularly strong opinion on this. Fortunately, I'll put a link again to this article as well. This is in The Atlantic, and it's written by Anthony Gregory. Anthony Gregory is a wonderful writer. I love his stuff. He is really good. He is a research editor of the Independent Institute. If that sounds familiar, that's Robert Higgs is over there at the Independent Institute, and so Anthony Gregory is a part of the Independent Institute, and so he's definitely a good guy and definitely one of us on our side. Anyway, so the article in The Atlantic is, the headline is, "Why Legalizing Organ Sales Would Help to Save Lives and End Violence." Now, when you start talking about legal organ sales, a lot of people are going to get really nervous about this, and they're going to think, oh, if we have legal organ sales, they're going to be kidnapping people and stealing their organs. Well, actually, that happens. That kind of thing happens in a black market. That doesn't happen. You see, you don't see in an above board market, you don't see the people at, Jack Daniels running illegal moonshine across Tennessee and into the Kentucky. You don't see that. Why is that? Because they have a legal market. They don't need to take the risks that you take in a black market. So today we have a black market in organs. That means people take crazy risks, and it drives the prices of organs outrageously out of reach for most people. And it, because the government is interfering in it, it creates two things. It creates both a glut and a shortage. That's what socialism always creates, a glut and a shortage. So you say, well, it doesn't seem to be a glut of organs. Actually, there's a glut of organs, but they're mostly being, thrown away. That's what's happening to most organs that are fully usable for transplant. The vast majority of good, usable organs are just thrown away. The few that are made available are the ones that are legal. There are so many hoops to jump through that most people cannot obtain a legal organ transplant. Oddly enough, if you're a chronic alcoholic sports figure with a violent past, there's a good likelihood you're going to get an organ transplant. Or if you happen to be the owner of Apple Computers or the CEO, then, and you're dying of cancer anyway, and you're going to die with or without the organ transplant, somehow magically you get an organ transplant. That's under the current system we have today. But most people who need an organ transplant in the United States can't get one because of all the silly regulations and the hoops you have to go through and the entirely socialist process that controls the organ transplant industry. However, if there was a free market in organs, that would all be different. Now you say, again, this might be scary to somebody. Oh, you know, there's going to be like body snatchers. They're going to run around to old folks' home and try to harvest. Well, again, that's what happens in a black market. That's not what happens in an above-board market. Now, if you step away from all the hype and all the fear and all the nonsense, and you just ask yourself some real basic questions, like, for instance, who owns my kidneys? Who owns your kidneys? Do you own your kidneys? Do you own your fingers? Do you own your eyes? Do you own yourself? Now, those in government and those socialists who attempt to lord over all of us, they either openly say that we are owned by the state. The honest ones are clear about that. The less honest ones try to wash the issue away or try to avoid the question altogether, or they'll try to say, oh, but we have to maintain safety for everybody. We have these laws so that everyone can be safer, or so that the majority of people are safer. Hey, go back to the question. Who owns my kidney? Whose kidney is this? Whose little finger is this? Whose nose am I breathing through? Whose eyes do I see through? If they're not mine, then who do they belong to? And what right do they have to own them over me? Now, when you start to break it down to these simple, basic things, and you wash away all the emotion, and you wash away all the rhetoric, and you wash away all the nonsense, and you break it right down to its basic core, and you say, where's the ownership? Now, this is a principle that you can apply to almost any question. Who's going to make the roads? What are we going to have with roads? Go back to ownership. Go back to property rights. Go back to, why are you forcing me to pay for roads for somebody in Alaska? Well, it's the same thing with organ transplants. Who owns the organ? If it's my kidney, why can I not sell it? If I set this up legally, that where it says that in a case of an accident, let's say I'm killed in a car accident, the moment that I'm killed in a car accident, my body becomes the property of Joe's organ shop, okay? And I have a contract with Joe's organ shop. And the minute I get killed in a car accident, Joe's organ shop takes ownership of my body because I've contracted it to them. Now, all of a sudden, my eyes, who knows what they're worth? We don't know because there's no market right now. The market is distorted by the socialist government laws. But if there was no socialist government laws, there would be a free market price for eyes. And when I get in a car accident and I'm killed in the car accident and Joe's organ shop takes ownership of my body, then all of a sudden, through contract with them, my heirs will have the correct market price for my eyes or my kidneys or whatever else is salvageable from the car accident, rather than like a car where you pick it up and you haul it to a junkyard and they take a look at it and they say, well, is this thing salvageable? And almost all of the car is recycled in one form or another. That's what currently happens. But rather than that, we take a perfectly good human body that just has died for whatever reason and we throw it away. We just throw it away. And what kind of value is that we're throwing away? What is it that, how much, if instead of selling it to Joe's organ shop, let's say I wanted to sell it to a university for study purposes. Well, nowadays I can donate my body to science or donate my body to a particular university to be used in one way or the other. But what profit is that? What good is that? That doesn't help my family after I'm dead. That doesn't put my children through college. That doesn't put food on the table. In a free market, I should be able to write up a contract that states that when on the occasion of my death, that the usable body parts will be harvested and sold and will support my family. How is that immoral? How is that bad? How is that any different than an auto crash where the auto body and the engine parts and the seats and all the things that are usable are taken out and reused, and the parts that are not reusable are crushed and melted down and made into a new car or made into a soda can or whatever. We have Baggy the cat back with us again. That's becoming a standard now that we've moved the Bad Quaker office. Baggy finds a way to invade and gives her opinion on whatever I have to say. Now, this is this topic particularly touches my family because we have a very important loved one in our family right now who may or may not under the right circumstances, have qualified, would have qualified for a liver transplant, probably would not have definitely would not have qualified under the current socialist organ transplant process. But under a free market process, there's a possibility that she might have. So quite literally, the loss of this very important person that we love could have been, very likely could have been avoided had we had a free market in organs. Because the vast majority of organs are in the United States are just literally thrown away. Well, if they were profitable, and we don't know what level of profitable that means. I mean, how much, what's an organ worth? Is an organ worth $10,000, $50,000, $1 million? I don't know. Steve Jobs probably paid an awful lot to get his. I don't know what the several sports figures that very famously obtained livers, even though they were chronic alcoholics at the time. I don't know what they ended up paying for theirs, and I'm not making any accusation. All I'm saying is, what is the actual free market price for one? Well, there's no way of knowing. There's no way of knowing until they're available on the market to be purchased, and then we'd know what the price is. It may be too much. It may be outrageous. It may be more than the average person can afford, or it may not. Think about how many people die. Just on a regular day-to-day basis, how many people die and how many organs just get shredded and flushed at the mortuary as a routine. And what are all those worth? We don't know. But I know this, that if I don't own my body, I don't own anything. And I know this, ownership is a natural part of the human experience. And anything that interrupts my ownership of my property is against true law. It's wrong. It's evil. True law, true ownership, true property is guaranteed to me by my very existence. The fact that I am a human being and I'm alive means I have a right to property. Now, that's just the natural state of man, and anything that interferes with that is unnatural, is evil, and should be rejected. And that's the state. And that's what's going on. And that's why people die in America, because they don't have that kidney available for them at a free market price, or that liver available for them at free market price, where they walk around blind because there are no eyes on the market at a free market price. That's why. Now let's get back to Anthony Gregory's wonderful article, and again, I'll link to this at badquaker.com. According to this article, there's about 20,000 kidneys in the U.S. made available each year, and yet there are 80,000 patients waiting. In 2008, he says 5,000 patients died waiting for a kidney transplant. That's just in 1 year. And that's 5,000 that maybe wouldn't have died. At least the majority of them wouldn't have, if there was a free market in kidneys. Again, we don't know what the price would be because it's distorted by the socialist government. According to his article, in the year 2007, in the entire world, there were about 64,000, well, that's a pretty accurate, I mean, a pretty specific number, 64,606 kidney transplants worldwide. Yet there are millions of people that suffer with kidney disease, and there are millions of people dying with perfectly good kidneys that could be sold and could help their families and their loved ones and their heirs. And yet that's all lost. The entire industry is lost. And why is that? It's because there's a prohibition. A prohibition. You see, prohibition and alcohol, we know, didn't work. How do we know it didn't work? Because we suffered through the ridiculousness of the prohibition. But America can't take the lesson. It's like, okay, if I pick up a baseball bat and I hit myself in the face with it and I say, oh, wow, I need to learn that lesson. don't hit yourself in the face with a baseball bat. So I put the baseball bat down and I pick up a really big stick and I whack myself in the face with that. And I say, oh my, that's totally different than a baseball bat. Maybe I'll have to learn that lesson. So I put down the stick and then I pick up a board and I hit myself in the face with the board. At what point do you figure out, hey, smacking yourself in the face with a hard object is a bad idea? Well, this is the way with prohibition. We know prohibitions don't work. We know prohibitions produce a black market. We know prohibitions distort the price structure. The state itself distorts the price structure, but the mechanism is prohibition. We know that this creates a black market. We know that this creates a criminal element. We know that it supports the criminal element. And we know that it perpetuates the funding of the criminal element. We know these things. And yet we continue with prohibitions, whether it's on drugs or whether it's on organs or whether it's on milk or whether it's on any other ridiculous thing that the busybodies in government think that they can tell us what we can and can't have. You know what? Right now there's a black market in toilets. Are you aware of this? A black market in toilets. Because our stupid government, because the people in our stupid government have decided how toilets are supposed to flush, and certain toilets are approved and certain toilets are not approved, and this creates a black market for toilets. There's a black market for shower heads in the U.S. because the idiots in Washington, D.C. decided that a shower head can only give out so much water. And so now there's a black market in shower heads. And there are procedures on how to take a regular, a legal, an approved shower head, a government-approved shower head, and fix it so that it works. I myself did an article on this at a particular website that I... Anyway, maybe I'll do it on YouTube. That could be a good... we have a YouTube channel now for Bad Quaker. Maybe I'll get a shower head and do a YouTube on how to work around the government blockage of shower heads, and maybe that'll be our first YouTube video. That might be fun. Because you can't do that with a toilet. You can't very well drill out a toilet and make it flush better. Okay, so anyway, so we've covered the three major things that I wanted to cover. I want to mention again that if you didn't hear yesterday's audio article called The Constant Enemy of Liberty, it's actually a compilation of several articles that I've done in the past. But go on over to badquaker.com and scroll down and download that audio article. Or if you're the type that prefers reading, it's kind of a large article. I don't know exactly what the word count is. I would say it's probably close to... maybe close to 4,000 words or so. It's a pretty big article, but the audio version is there, and the I don't want to say print article. What do you call that? Anyway, the article's there. You can read it or you can download it and listen to it. I seriously don't know why iTunes rejected it. I have some suspicions, but that's all just speculation. Anyway, folks, thanks again for listening to BadQuaker.com. I do appreciate every one of the listeners. We're now a little over 1,000 listeners a day. Well, I shouldn't say a day. We're averaging about 1,000 listeners per download. No, that's not right either. 1,000 listeners per audio file. There we go. Roughly about 1,000 listeners per audio file. And I do appreciate them, each one of you guys that's listening to us and supporting us. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend. And we'll try with every effort to bring another article or podcast or interview or something interesting for you on Monday, as we try every weekday to do so. Thank you very much, folks.